Welcome to Nightlife, bite-sized travel.
Tonight in Monday Night Travel, we are off to one of America's most historic cities, Boston. It was established, of course, back in 1630 and has played a major role in the events surrounding the American Revolution. Notably, of course, the Boston Tea Party and the Boston Massacre. It's also a place to head for culinary delights such as clam chowder. Our travel correspondent tonight is travel writer Patricia Maunder, and she joins us on the program. Patricia, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Hi, Phil. Good to be here.
It's Boston really is a city to delight the history enthusiast, isn't it? I mean, it's rich with history.
Absolutely. And that's the number one reason I went there, and I was not disappointed. It's like history everywhere you look, all these lovely old buildings that are hundreds of years old and so many sites that are historically significant. As you say, Boston was central to the American Revolution. But even before then, it was so important for the British American colonies. It was one of the bright lights until people started saying, hang on a minute, no taxation without representation, and things went south. They threw the tea into the harbour.
Yes, they did. They did throw the tea into the harbour. There's a terrific way to explore Boston's history, isn't it? And they've done it really well, and I always think we've got things to learn from this. They've established a thing called the Freedom Trail, which is free, and basically it's a route that takes you around a great many of the key colonial and revolutionary sites, and you follow it round by following coloured bricks in the footpath. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it is absolutely, even if you're not super interested in history, I think it's well worth doing. There's 16 key colonial and revolutionary sites. You could probably breeze along it in a morning or an afternoon, but if you're even vaguely interested in history, you're going to want to stop and look at some things, and some places they're open for tours. So it starts at Boston Common, which is America's first public park, and it ends at the Bunker Hill Monument, where there was a Revolutionary War battle, and there's a big obelisk there, and you can walk up at 294 steps, which is a pretty exhausting, but when you get to the top, there's really good views across Boston. There's Paul Revere's house, so he famously did the midnight ride to let his fellow patriots know that the British were coming. There's the USS Constitution, which got the nickname of Old Ironsides during the war because it was basically indestructible. And apparently it's still a commissioned ship. It's the world's oldest commissioned ship. So it's a bit like HMS Victory in England. So you can go and tour around, and I don't think it ever goes sailing anywhere, but you actually have actual naval personnel on the ship. And there's a museum attached to it as well. So you can just walk it with the free map, or there's an app. You can take a guided tour via the so many options with the guided tours, but the one at the via the visitor center at Boston Common, where the walk starts, they actually have guides all dressed up in colonial costumes. That costs a little bit. Or you can do a guided tour for free with the National Park Service, because the Freedom Trail is within the Boston National Historic Park, which encompasses much of central Boston, because there's just so much history there.
Yeah, it is. It's worthwhile. I mean, I remember once walking up onto Bunker Hill, and the whole story, and they've done it beautifully up there, because there's a museum there as well, and it explains the battle, which was, of course, so intriguing in itself, because it was really just ordinary citizens with home muskets, which basically defeated crack brigades of the British Army. And the British Army thought that, this would just be a pushover. Who are these people?
Years
later. And,
of
course, it didn't work out that way.
Not at all. So, heritage galore in Boston.
They call it America's Walking City, don't they?
Yes, and very richly deserved title, because really, there's a great subway, and you can go a few stops up to Harvard, which is America's oldest university. Boston's full of firsts, and it has some lovely architecture. But if you only have a couple of days, just get around on foot for the most part if you want. And one of the most interesting, outside of the very central part of Boston with the buildings from the 16th and The 17th and 18th century, a little bit further around the corner, Copley Plaza or Copley Square? Anyway, it's surrounded by lots of lovely 19th century buildings. So there's the Copley Plaza Hotel, which was, I think, built in 1812. There's this gorgeous Romanesque style Trinity Church. There's the Boston Public Library, which is America's first municipal library. And that's worth going into because it's beautifully decorated inside with paintings and sculptures. There's a whole lot of murals by very famous Boston painter of the 19th century, John Singer Sargent. The interior is so impressive that you can pick up a brochure at the front desk and it gives you a bit of a guide to mm-hmm. what's available. And if you have half an hour, well, I needed more than half an hour. I need to go back because I ran out of time. But, do pop in. It's really beautiful.
And there are a number of Georgian-style markets clustered in the centre of town which are worth a visit to, aren't there?
Yes. So there's the Faneuil Market, Quincy Market, the North and the South Market, all clustered together. It's a bit odd that they didn't spread them out. But anyway, it works well for tourists because you can get all your shopping done. You get lots of very cool souvenirs with a bit of a history theme to them in or a sports theme because there's like the Red Sox. There's the Boston Bruins with ice hockey. There's the Celtics in the basketball and the New England Patriots who keep winning the Super Bowl. They're mm-hmm. all from Boston. Back to the markets. It's also great for getting food. There's lots and lots of food carts and food stalls. Quite good fast food and often with a bit of a New England style to them. So you could get something like clam chowder, no worries.
Now, did you have some clam chowder?
Well, sorry, Phil, I can't speak for that because I'm vegetarian, but I do believe that Boston is the place for clam chowder.
It is the place for clam chowder, of course. Yes, exactly.
And you can get it at a pub that I love in Boston. It was established in 1795, so another first, America's oldest tavern, the Bell in Hand. And it's in that very old rambling central part of Boston with the little narrow laneways, and it's on a triangular block of land. So even before you step in, it's just fascinating to look at. And then you get inside, and it's quite cozy, and there's lots of heritage elements. So there's exposed stone walls, and you look at that menu for your clam chowder and lobster rolls, and maybe get yourself a Samuel Adams ale. That's one of the local breweries named after what are they called? America's founding fathers. So a Bostonian of yore.
That's right. That's right. In fact, speaking of modern times, the 80s sitcom Cheers was inspired by a bar in Boston. In fact, I think they've built the exterior in Boston. You can actually go and have a look.
Yeah, I think the bar that inspired it's still there, and they shot the exterior for the TV show of that bar, but then they built a bar in the studio for the interior. So basically everything that happened in the show. And so they've actually built another Cheers bar at Faneuil Market that is an exact replica of the studio bar interior from the show. So anyone who is old enough to remember Cheers, if you're a fan, go to Boston.
Fantastic. All that history too, you might forget that Boston is also home to some amazing art galleries too. You went to a couple, the Fine Art Museum.
Yes. Oh, it's enormous. I didn't realise how big it was until I got there and thought, I have not allowed enough time for this. I need to come back. Luckily, the ticket's good for 10 days. There's 500,000 artworks. Obviously, they're not all on display at once, but there's still thousands to look at. Mm. Not quite on the scale of the Metropolitan Museum in New York, but up there. I think it's the fifth largest art gallery in the US, so pretty substantial. It's particularly known for American, French Impressionist and Japanese art. But anything you're interested in, it's bound to be there. Like there was a whole room full of antique musical instruments. There was a whole room of jewellery. And again, local guy John Singer Sargent, he's done some beautiful, he did some beautiful ceiling murals around the, there's this central rotunda in the museum that's very beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, and the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum too. Tell us about this one.
That is one of my favourite museums in the whole world. It was built in the very early 20th century by a wealthy art collector, and she wanted to share it with the public. And it's stuffed with masterpieces. So that you got Titian, Rembrandt, So many amazing old masters, and also quite a lot of American artists. Again, John Singer Sargent, of course. I think, in fact, he might have painted Mrs. Gardner's portrait from memory. I think that's in there. But sadly, in 1990, very famously, a number of paintings were stolen, including a Vermeer, and there's only something like 40 of them in the whole world, and they've never been recovered. The frames are still there of the paintings that were stolen, because Mrs. Gardner's will said you have to leave the museum exactly how I wanted it. So they can't actually take the empty frames down. In a way, it's a good thing, because it's like, oh, that's a permanent loss to human culture. So,
exactly. Yeah,
rather than just sort of gloss over it. But it's not just paintings, there's sculptures, there's a lot of beautiful decorative art, so furniture and textiles. And interestingly, the whole building is like a Renaissance Venetian palazzo, so palace. And it's set up like it's a four-story building with a courtyard in the middle. So when you get a little bit weary of looking at these spectacular paintings, you can just go to a window overlooking the beautiful courtyard garden. And this courtyard is the first thing you see when you go into the museum proper, after you've gone through the modern entrance and paid your ticket and so on. Then you step into Mrs. Gardner's wonder, and it's like, oh, so beautiful. But you're not allowed to take photos, so that's sad.
Ah, that's okay. Modern mania with taking photos. And the another cultural highlight, of course, is the Symphony Hall. This is the grand American neoclassical style hall. It's the home of the Boston Symphony Orchestra.
Yes, it's a National Historic Landmark, so yet another interesting historic building in Boston. They clearly love their history. And apparently it has the best acoustics in the United States, and I believe it. I went to a concert there, and it was pretty awesome. And I had the pleasure of singing with Renee Fleming there. Da, da. But me and hundreds of others.
You were going to say, well, you were singing underneath your breath, were you?
No, it was she got the audience to sing with her in the encore. So I can, to this day, to my dying day, I can say that I sang with Renee Fleming, the great opera star.
Yeah, it's good fun. No, it's worth a visit. I endorse it, having been there myself, to Boston. Just replete with history. If you're remotely interested in the American story and the American Revolution in particular, it's a must see destination. All right, Patricia, good to talk. Thanks.
Thanks, Phil. See you soon.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.